Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 83. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me, as always, is Ken Phillips. How you doing, sir?
Hello, I'm doing well. 83? We made it this far, Kevin. I think we're almost within sighting distance of the number 100.
The frequency has upgraded this year. So I would have to say that 100 would definitely be within sight, by the halfway point of the year.
Yeah, we're at the point now where if we're, sailing our ship along the podcast ocean, if we stood up at the very top of the sail and used a telescope, at this point, I think we could start to see the shores of episode 100 ahead of us. So, yeah, I don't know. Who knows if we'll do something different for that one or just be another episode,
Yeah, well, considering my logo marathon here recently... I've had a number of ideas for an OPA logo, and I think I just need to put it together at this point. Like, I feel confident enough in what I can do in what I'm sure is not the best graphic design tools, but nonetheless, they are working for our purposes.
Well, there you go.
But that would be something to gun for. Make sure I definitely have our logo done by the time episode 100 hits.
Well, that sounds like a pretty noble goal there. And I think we can do it. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I feel, like I said, I have something in mind. It would pend your approval, but I think it works.
Yeah. So. Well, Kevin, there was a piece of news this week that... When I saw it, I didn't actually get to add this to our show list, but I was not at all surprised when I saw that you did.
I've got to admit, when I see news at night, I am not as always apt to read it, because at that point, I am probably watching professional wrestling. News comes around during the daytime, much higher frequency of me reading it.
Yeah, this seemed like a pretty big piece of science news that was getting a fair share of play. You probably may have heard something about it.
Yeah, I mean, it always cracks me up when it's part of... It's big enough that I get a Yahoo alerts about it. There are not a whole lot of stories that we cover that would fall under that category, in my opinion. We try to find stuff that's a little more obscure than what you're going to find on your regular Yahoo page.
So, yes, this is the discovery of a planetary system, a solar system, that has seven planets that they think are pretty much Earth-size, right around Earth-size.
And not only are they Earth-sized, there are three of them that are in the habitable zone, and another four that they think could possibly still be habitable. And part of the I thought it was just really fascinating and you kind of mentioned it, and we just talked a little bit about it before the show about how the system works differently, because the sun, their sun, is smaller than ours.
Correct, yes.
But all of the planets are a lot closer together within orbit. They actually compared it to, was it the moons of Jupiter, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
That have, there's large to small ones, so they have their own orbits around, a larger moon.
Yes, they said that this star was a lot smaller. It's like they call it a super cool dwarf, I think.
Yes, super cool dwarf.
So,
which is a pretty awesome name.
Yeah, that is great. I guess, trying to think of other super cool dwarfs. Would you say Gimli was a super cool dwarf? I'm not sure if I would say that or not.
Yeah, dwarves, in general, not really all that cool.
Right.
Get a little greedy, get a little grumpy.
Yeah. Gruff.
Gruff. Yeah.
Grimy.
You know, obviously, he had his friendship with, why am I blanking on...
Legolas, I think, is what you're thinking of. Yes. Yeah.
It was bad that I was going to go Orlando Bloom's name.
Yes. Of course, the wood elf Legolas is what you're referring to.
Yeah, but I mean, it was something that kind of worked over time, and it was almost really in and of itself, by its nature, more of an adversarial friendship.
So, yeah, like, I guess there's really, people probably aren't that familiar with or have much contact with super cool dwarves in their, at least fantasy reading. But
I mean,
when it comes to science, they say that super cool dwarves are maybe a pretty common kind of star in the universe. So there could be more systems like this in other parts that we haven't discovered yet. So,
yeah, a
little contrast between science and fantasy, I guess.
Well, and they did mention that it's, 40 light years, from Earth.
Yeah. Which is pretty far, in terms of like us ever getting there.
Yeah, they pretty much said that it's, within the relative known, space region, they are close to us.
Yes.
But they are still not close to us.
So, like, if we discovered there were, you know, I mean, I guess the super, like, the coolest part about this whole thing is they're going to be able to actually study these planets in detail because of, well, the star being smaller, I guess, is good because it's less glare.
Yeah, that was, there were a lot of just fascinating, like, I guess I didn't really pay too much attention to the, I mean, I remember looking at the stars in Altoona, like, it was definitely not as, a little bit harder to find some, dark spots in Columbus.
Yeah, things, but the light pollution here is pretty bad.
Yeah, so, and, you know, I guess I was fascinated by some stuff, but I didn't ever do a very good job of reading about, you know, the universe itself. So, I mean, I guess there's a lot of factoids that maybe people know, but I found pretty interesting in this article. Because they found it kind of by accident.
Yeah.
And they're also, and I guess to kind of piggyback your point, they're sending out other better telescopes to take a look. Like, now that they know where it is, they can better program stuff to look for it, which helps.
Yeah, so they're kind of like trying to study, I think now, like regions of the sky at a time, over time, and just looking for like times when the star is dimmer than other times, and that can indicate there's a planet that's going in the way.
Yeah. Yes.
So then they can look for the like regularity of those kind of things.
Well, and that was, I guess that was the other thing too, that to really start back at the beginning of this, is that when they it's called a TRAPPIST, transiting planets and planet small telescope.
Small?
It's planetesimals. Yeah, planetesimals.
Okay.
Yeah, transiting planets and planetesimals. Small telescope.
So I think a planetesimal might be something like Pluto or something like that.
Yeah.
Smaller than a planet. Yeah.
And I've got to drag this into it too. And you might not have listened to it, but I listened to Neil deGrasse Tyson on Joe Rogan, because I think it was last week that it might have actually been posted.
The notorious NDG.
Yeah, but it was kind of funny that he mentioned he was one of the people to get Pluto kicked out of the planet category.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like famous for that. Like, he's down with Pluto as a planet. I think he makes a pretty good case, you know.
Well, yeah, I think, did he say it's smaller than the moon?
Yes.
I was just like, oh my lord, okay, yep. You got me on that factoid alone. Like, I don't need really any more information. I'm good.
Yeah, that is kind of the closing argument, I think. It's just not that big.
I don't need a whole lot of convincing.
And then you throw in that there's, like, so many other objects that are about, you know, similar in size or bigger. And it's like, okay, we probably shouldn't specially set this one apart as a planet when these other ones we would never call a planet.
Right. The one thing that was kind of interesting, because you're talking about how the planets cut in front of the moon, they did initially just notice three planets.
Yes, and then upon further review, they went under the hood and determined there's actually seven of them.
Seven, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm rewinding things a little bit, but, you know, that was pretty interesting, too, is that after they did kind of find that little area, because, you know, again, they're just kind of trying to discover more as they move along.
I just realized that was a GIF there on the NASA Tumblr. Yeah, this wasn't pulling up on my phone for some reason. I had to go to a separate article to
they were mentioning that liquid water as we know it could exist on all seven planets. But three of them were obviously more habitable. And it was pretty fascinating, too, that while we were talking about how the this little star system was all closer together, they were saying that you could look, if you lived on one of the planets, you could look up and make out features on the planet next to you.
Wow. So I wonder, like...
Which is wild. Like, I mean, we have a hard time seeing what's on the moon. Like, it's closer than the moon.
Like, that would be super easy to travel between, I would think.
That would make interplanetary travel easier. But obviously, you know, the shorter the distance, especially in space terms.
Yeah, it does bring to mind several exciting possibilities, I mean, to my mind at least. I mean, first, I guess, is that maybe even in our lifetimes, they'll be able to study these planets and determine by, I think, using like some kind of spectral analysis to be able to see like what the wavelengths of light that are coming back off these planets, to see like what is in the atmosphere, they said. And if they can tell that there's more oxygen that would normally be there, that could be a good indicator of like plant life on the planet, and they could probably find sort of other imbalances that would indicate that life was present by using you know, this kind of tools, where they can, it's pretty neat, being able to see like what light is reflected off of there, they can kind of get a signature of what elements are present.
The one telescope is the James Webb Space Telescope. It will be launching next year. Mm-hmm. They're saying that they're going to check for chemical fingerprints of water, methane, oxygen, ozone, and other components of a planet's atmosphere.
Yeah, so now that these planets have been identified, they'll like, be going to be able to...
That's crazy that a telescope does that.
They're going to be able to zoom in on these and really study them. Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. It really is.
That is bonkers.
I mean, that's something that I remember watching. I think it was on Cosmos. Yeah, it was on Cosmos. Speaking of Neil deGrasse Tyson, he was kind of explaining that that's kind of like what his deal was. Like, that's kind of how he got into science. And he kind of was explaining the person who first invented that by... like taking a prism and splitting the light into its component colors and then noticing black spots in the prism, like in the rainbow.
Oh, right.
And those black spots were characteristic of what elements were present at that light, at the light source, basically. So lights coming off the planet would have that signature to indicate like what kind of elements were present. So that's pretty wild stuff, because so you're able to like find out what's there by just looking at the light that's coming from that planet. So I don't know, pretty wild. That's wild stuff there.
Yeah, and I mean, I would think that if they're kind of looking for it, there could be proof of life on other planets within our lifetime.
Yeah, so that is like the first, I guess, of the interesting ideas that I had. The other was probably going to be outside of our lifetimes, but eventually, you could imagine sending some type of spaceship that was big enough to support people like over generations, right? Like a generation starship. You could send like a colony of people to these planets.
That was kind of another amusing side bit. The notorious NDG kind of mentioned. It's like if we send people to Mars and we have the ability to send like a billion people, do we really need to inhabit another planet? You know, because the I know that we've talked about it in prior shows, or at least something like it, like the amount of energy that needs to be expended to get into outer space is crazy. So to send something that would support generations of people, millions of light years away.
Oh,
or 40 light years away.
Come on. Yes.
You know, it is an extremely tall, like, there's going to be a lot of cool advances. Like, there's still something to make that practical that needs to, of all the cool shit that we talk about, and I think there's a lot of it, like, this, that still seems a little out there.
Yes, like I know.
Some type of hyperdrive type of situation. Oh. Like, I mean, you kind of need to find something, you know, like that.
Well, either something like that or something where you can just send people out there, you know, who are just going to spend their lives on their way there, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've really got to sign up for that, man. Like, you are signing your family up for this
for a
long time.
For generations.
Yeah.
So, like, not that they have a say.
Yeah. That second generation's got to be pretty pissed, but I mean, the third generation's just got to be going, well, I mean, come on, really?
I'm all in on this now.
Yeah, like, we're a little too deep now. Like, we've got to keep this rolling. Like, might get a little gusto back.
That's when you start to, you know, come up with rationalizations that, oh, this is actually better. Yeah, I'm glad we're stuck here on this spaceship.
For our entire lives.
Yeah.
And we're going to die well before we get to our destination.
Like, that is freaking awesome that we're doing this.
But yeah. You know what? My great 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 grandkids will be able to tell people about this.
Well, I wonder how long that would take, because I remember reading at some point that to get to Proxima Centauri, which I think they said is, I don't know, single digit light years away from Earth, which is like the nearest star. It would maybe take like 70 years in the fastest like conceivable ship that we could make. So if we're going to maybe seven times that, so I don't know, 300-400 years somewhere in there.
I mean, I guess that, you know, you're what, five generations then?
But you would, those people would be like completely separate from the people on Earth. Like, it would be like, they would have nothing in common, really.
No. Like, I mean, you might kind of have to be a different species by the time you get there.
Which is almost like, well, what's the... What, is this worth it? Like, I don't know. I guess, you know, the old, the Earth is gonna be destroyed or something, then yes, that would make perfect sense. But it might take something like that to happen.
Oh, yeah, and that was the other part of NDG's argument, that if we have the ability to ship this many humans to another planet million light years away, couldn't we just stop, somehow find a way to stop asteroids from hitting the Earth? I think that's a somewhat reasonable request to maybe worry about defending your territory first.
Although I will say, at some point, the sun, I believe, will consume the Earth, according to science at this time.
Yeah, that is true.
That's a far from now. Obviously.
Yeah, that would be like them finally getting there in light years, about when our sun it dies out.
So in the next, you know, 5 billion years or whatever it is, it's something along that order.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing. I guess that even finding out this has, even if they figure out it has life, like, A, traveling there... you know, their solar system might implode by the time you get there.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to pick the right... Like, I'm not sure how much of a lifespan, I guess I could look that up. Because it was an ultra-cool dwarf. And I'm not quite sure what the time frame is on that, as far as, like, how many years that's supposed to...
I feel last. Like...
Because stars last different...
I feel like in general, like, the bigger stars go quicker because they're like kind of using up their energy more quickly. But I don't know if a super cool dwarf is like a star that's kind of far along in its life cycle and that it's kind of cooled down over time. But I'm not sure if that's necessarily even true. Ultra cool, super cool. Ultra cool dwarf.
Yeah, I believe I let the super slide earlier.
Yeah,
and then skimming through the article, I realized that
my terrible error.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure that everyone's
people were screaming at their podcast devices.
Ultra
cool! It's ultra cool. Yeah, I knew that was happening.
It does not really have a life cycle listed for it, and it's a relatively new type of star, only discovered or at least brought into vogue in 1997.
Oh.
So, yes, within our lifetime... this was introduced. So
they were in vogue around the time of En Vogue, is what you're saying. I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. I think that checks out.
Yeah, that probably does check out.
I'm not sure anyone out there remembers En Vogue or not, but they were a musical group in the 90s.
Anyone that listens to this, 89 to the present.
Okay.
So, yes, they definitely might have been ultra cool in 1997.
Just like the certain dwarfs that we know in the science.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just... it's just a very fascinating thing, and I really did like at the end of the Tumblr, and I might use this as the picture for the show. It's a poster of what it would look like to look out the window. If you lived on, like, it looks like the planet closest to the star, or the ultra cold dwarf.
I think it's they said the fourth one.
Oh, the fourth one?
Yeah.
Oh, I see 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. I see 6 other red dots.
I don't know. I didn't think that was a planet for some reason, but 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, either way.
Yeah, it's the second one, maybe.
Well, somebody needs to get their act together, because I'm pretty sure the article I read said 4.
Well, yeah, I'm just doing an eye count on this one. I did not read that particular article.
Yeah.
Because
I can't argue with your eye count, Kevin. It's pretty conclusive.
on the NASA site, it does not really say, because it just says Planet Hop from TRAPPIST-1E voted best hab zone vacation.
Well, wait, 1E
within 12 parsecs of Earth.
E would be the fifth planet, then, I would think, if you're going A, B, C, D, E. So that doesn't make any sense. Unless you're looking towards inward, but then where's the sun? Oh, it's off to the side. Just looking at the shadows.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? That was the other part that they were wondering that I thought was fascinating, and I'm glad we kind of started breaking down that poster. It was the fact that the way that sun works, they were thinking that the gravitational pull might actually make it that one side of the planet is always in sun and the other side is always dark.
Yeah, so since they're kind of they are almost like a moon around a big planet, so like the moon on Earth is always stuck facing one direction. Hence the dark side of the moon that Pink Floyd wrote an album about once upon a time. So these planets would also have a light side and a dark side, which I would want to live on the right there on that border, I think. You know, that's the way to do it. So when you're feeling, you know, you want some sun, you go over to the one side. You know, you're ready to go to bed, whatever, you go to the dark side there.
Yeah, you plummet in temperatures by thousands of degrees.
Well, they did say that if, you know, these planets are Earth-sized, they could have an atmosphere like the Earth, which would even things out more than, a planet didn't have an atmosphere. Which I think is one of the, well, Mars doesn't have a lot of atmosphere, so that's kind of a...
Oh, bummer about Mars.
Maybe a downer with Mars, yeah. Not to rain on... NDG's parade there, but we may not. Maybe Mars isn't the best place to live.
Oh,
I mean, Mars would be.
Yeah, he thought that it was quite impractical to try and live on Mars. Like he, you know, it. I think that him and Joe Rogan did not maybe hypothesize the. We have to do this or else our planet's going to die or like, you know, the planet is dying, so we need to do it kind of situation. It was more of a, they're choosing to send people to Mars, which is kind of, you know, there's two different angles there.
Just because you're
going down the hypotheses route.
Just because it's there, it seems to be, is kind of the reason.
It's there. It is semi-habitable. People feel like there was life. Some people feel like there was life form there.
It seems like it'd be very boring, though. It's like a big desert, right? I mean, I don't know.
I do believe that it's a giant red desert.
Now, to any Martians out there listening, I'm sorry to be, you know, I'm sure there's very nice places on Mars that we're not, you know... We're kind of generalizing and stereotyping a little bit, and
yeah,
that's probably not very cool of us. So we're sorry.
I suppose I would be interested in Martian food to see what that maybe tastes like.
Yeah.
You know, it'd have to be something completely different.
You would think so. It's a different planet. I don't know. They've got to be, that would be weird if they just had, like, hamburgers and fries up there. That would be, that would probably raise more questions than it answers if we were to discover that.
Well, would it be weird if the Martians served you other Martian?
Oh, wow. Now, that wouldn't actually be cannibalism, then, because since we're not Martians, we would maybe... It wouldn't be as weird for us to eat Martians.
Yeah, it would be a little bit different because I did find it interesting in this next article about, cannibalism.
Yes, we've reached the cannibalism portion of today's program.
Yeah, there's no subtle way to get to cannibalism. Like, I did what I could. I did what I could.
I suppose if there was a problem with the food production on Mars, people may end up resorting to cannibalism in some type of grim dystopian science fiction future.
Yeah, and I guess that was one thing that, you know, sometimes these headlines, I note that they kill me. And they mentioned that cannibalism is surprisingly common, and I feel like they did not really make it feel surprisingly common to me.
And they also, in the article, undermine the fact that it's the ultimate taboo, because they note that in some cultures, it's really not a taboo.
Yeah, they did say that it's more of a Western thing to not want to eat... other humans. In China, they mentioned that not a taboo. So yeah, that it is kind of undermining your own point.
So they kind of failed in two ways in this headline, I would say. We could argue.
Yeah. And they do mention that there are a number of animal and insect and lizard?
Oh,
amphibian
that will eat their own kind.
Yeah, but I've got to admit that the majority of the article was spent talking about humans and their habits, so it was kind of easy to forget.
Yeah,
that if you're making a in nature argument, but I feel like they weren't really making that much of an in nature argument.
Well, they did mention several species that I think, you know, well, famously praying mantises.
Yes.
And spiders. I think sharks also will eat like their siblings, like when they're born. And they said the same thing with those toads.
To help get themselves out of the pond.
To get out of there quicker, yes.
Quicker.
But I was mostly just thinking of like non-mammals, I guess, as a lot of the examples. But then I did read, get to the part where they talked about the bears who would eat the cubs, the male bears, I guess, in particular.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that Mama Bear sticks around a lot of times. She does prefer to prevent that from happening most of the time.
Yeah, and maybe sometimes, like, the father bear could stick around to, like, fight off other males, too, I think. Sadly, if that bear is not your, you know, DNA, I don't think the bear's... care very much for it. Even sometimes probably depending on if they're hungry. I mean, do you ever see that movie Grizzly Man?
No.
No. That'd be interesting to check out sometime.
Because, yeah, he gets dead at the end of that, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. That spoiler alert for Grizzly Man. I think that movie's like 11 years old at this point or something, at least. So.
Yeah, I think I can skip the spoiler alert on that one. Because I even think at this point the ironic spoiler alert is maybe jumping the shark.
Oh, no. Oh, you call me out. So, he, in that is a documentary about this guy who goes to live with the bears. And he is really an eccentric character. But he kind of really identifies with the bears and kind of thinks of himself as being part of their group or whatever.
Oh, right.
It seemed like there was another bear that came in that was hungry. And, you know, it was a bad time of year. And
yeah, I mean, they're bears, man. I mean, that is a huge creature that if you don't have something to defend yourself with, you are screwed.
Right. And
if it really cares. I mean, I know that people can live and kind of scare them away and things of that nature, but you, I don't want to take that bet.
No, I wouldn't either, especially if I was a little bear cub. I would definitely want to have some protection around. Lions, I think, too, are supposedly also the ones that will eat their cubs. Or someone else's cubs, probably, more likely.
It's hinted at the beginning of the article, too, of one reason not for go against cannibalism, and it gets mentioned later, too. They mentioned mad cow disease, which was because cows were eating other cows.
Yes. Not by choice.
Right.
By being kind of ground up and put into the cow feed, which is pretty gross as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because they took like leftover body parts and things of that nature and put it in the feed. And that's how the mad cow came about. There's a lot of, you know, just from reading the article, there are a lot of negative effects in certain species, like the cows, from eating their own. And a lot of the bad ones are in humans, too. Like, mm-hmm. It does not seem like a particularly... And they kind of talk about the rugby team that survived in the Andes. Because I always remember watching that movie Alive, like, not long after it had come out. I think we watched it in the original Altoona DeFrango compound as a family.
Oh, yes. I remember that movie, too. I think that was also in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
I looked that up earlier this today, and I'll have to look it up now, but I did not remember that Ethan Hawke was one of the gentlemen in there, and it was someone else really famous, and I'm like, oh, like, you know, that was a time that I wasn't paying attention to actors, directors, or at least as much attention as I do these days.
Yeah, it's, I remember it being a pretty good movie. Although a rather grim subject matter with the whole having to eat your fellow teammates thing. But it did kind of paint it as a, they kind of had to, I guess. And, you know, I mean, how would you feel about it if somebody, like if you were all like starving to death and you happened to die? I mean, would you really be upset at that point if someone...
That's one of those ones where I guess when they did kind of broach that subject, I just thought, I'm like, I'm an organ donor. Like, if someone eats it, does it really matter? Like, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially if it's not like it's, I mean, I don't know.
Well, and that was kind of the other interesting thing is that I didn't know that there were other words for eating humans if you don't kill them. Because I think cannibalism connotes that you have dispatched of your subject,
oh,
then consumed them.
I see.
There's, and I know that's in the article, and it's kind of towards the bottom. Now I'm looking for a couple of things. Well, and they did kind of talk about it.
That would be interesting to know that, but I guess it does make sense that there's a distinction there between, if someone happened to die anyway, and I guess that would be similar to what's happened with the Alive story anyway.
Yeah, and it was 1993 that Alive came
there
out.
There we go.
So, yeah, that would have been shortly before
that's
going to Kent State, or maybe right after.
Yeah, we would have still been in high school.
Yeah.
But, so, there are a few cultures, I suppose, that do think it's okay, or not have that stigma. Like you said, the Chinese. They said
this is one of the seriously negative aspects of cannibalism is the associated diseases like Kuru and Mad Cow. These are degenerative brain disorders are always fatal.
Yes.
Like, that is a horrific downside. Like, that's not really taboo at that point. That is just being, like... If our early ancestors realized that eating other early ancestors was not a good plan, people would go crazy after they did it, it's just like, oh, no, we need to stop doing this. And they stopped it a long-ass time ago.
Yeah, I mean, if that was part of the culture, that would tend to, like, be a part of the culture. That, like, if your culture was that, then you'd be having some problems, I guess.
right.
So... Yes, your culture would be most likely not to include cannibalism. They did say that the Chinese emperors, for some reason, were allowed, or it was not seen as odd for them to be cannibals. And they were depicted eating human body parts.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how I felt that they didn't include any images of these in the article. I mean, I gotta admit, I'm a little morbidly curious to see what kind of depictions these would look like. It's like, how do you make that look? I don't know. Like, if you are like a peasant, but maybe they wouldn't be seeing these depictions. I suppose that's it too. Like, who is this for? Is this a, I don't know. I guess there just wasn't any stigma associated with it. Pretty pretty weird to think about, though, Kevin.
yeah. Honestly, like, being stuck in the Andes for... And I kind of forgot, because I did kind of read the article about... Oh, maybe that's where I'm thinking that I saw that, because I'm not seeing it in this article. Maybe it's the... they interviewed one of the people one of the 16 that survived, I believe it was, and I read that article today too. So maybe I'll attach that also, but well, it's hyperlinked in the Nat Geo article anyway.
An article with a unfortunate headline, but. Still,
yeah, it's oh, and I guess what I was gonna say is that if you're stuck in a situation like the rugby team was, like, I mean, if that's your only choice to live, like, honestly, like, that isn't a choice.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can look down on you for that. Honestly,
like, I don't think understand that. Was crazy that they did mention that when people found out about it, they were looked down upon. I'm like, they were in the Andes for 72 days. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I think, like, that's understandable.
That is my opinion.
That's good. It's very understandable, I would think. And yeah, that's unfortunate.
The fact that you are still alive after that, Especially since, like, it was one of the higher peaks that they turned into. And I guess I didn't realize that the, or at least I'd forgotten that the guy tried to land too early because of turbulent weather, I believe, and turned the plane the wrong way and into the mountain.
Yeah, that is very unfortunate.
Oops. That's a pretty big oopsie.
But, you know, Kevin, if you're feeling hungry, something that might be good to pick up would be some, you know, it is the time that year, time of year, I suppose. You can pick up some Girl Scout cookies.
You can.
You can
pick them up through family friends.
Yeah.
Well, through family, I guess.
Sure. Family or friends. Family or friends, I would say.
Yeah. Or sometimes the Girl Scouts are outside of your local store.
Sure, you know, you might be going to pick up some groceries.
I have seen them myself at Kroger, Whole Foods.
Yep.
I believe, what's the Crafts? Michaels?
Oh, yeah.
Lowe's, even.
Yes, I have seen Lowe's.
So I've seen them any number of locations, but, one, young woman
of course it was San Francisco.
Yeah, in San Francisco. she opened up outside of a marijuana dispensary.
Yes.
And sold 117 boxes of cookies.
In 2 hours.
In 2 hours.
So that is doing some good selling. And it seems like it wasn't just the customers from the clinic. They pointed out there was other neighbors and passersby who purchased as well.
Yeah, they did say that.
But that is a pretty genius place to go, I would say.
Yeah, there is always the importance of location, whether it's your house, your place of business. Location, location, location is usually listed as the first three things you need to have right.
Now, daughter is actually participating in the brownies, but they sell the Girl Scouts as well. And I will say that in Ohio, they have approved locations where you can go and sell these Girl Scout cookies.
Ah.
So this would not be something that would fly with the Girl Scouts of Ohio. Let me just say that. and I was reading the article. I think there's a Mashable.com link in there as well, where they said that someone had started circulating a poorly photoshopped meme of Girl Scouts supposedly in Colorado selling outside of a one of their retail stores, and the Girl Scouts of Colorado responded and said this was a hoax. They would never allow Girl Scouts to sell outside a dispensary or bar / liquor store. And,
Well, I've got to admit, I did not read those articles.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I guess I delved a little deeper into this one based on my own personal experience. I thought this doesn't, but I guess in California, they're a little more laissez-faire, when it comes to where you can set up and sell your Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that the mother mentioned that so that they can learn about their kids to different locations to sell so that they can learn about different environments.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Like now, I guess the one thing that they didn't really go into is they didn't really say which. Where in San Francisco?
The Green Cross Medical Marijuana Clinic.
Oh. So,
not sure where that is, though.
I guess I was wondering if maybe it was an interesting part of town that they didn't typically go to.
Hmm. That could
be. I'm
not
saying they made a fortuitous stumble upon and decided to set up here.
Yeah, there's probably some kind of thought that went into it, I guess.
Yeah, but I guess I was just wondering if, and they didn't. It's a fairly short article, so there's a lot of information that still could be mined. But be interesting to know if it was a different part of town than they normally go to. Because if she had done this before, I would imagine that it would have made headlines before also.
Yeah, I guess so. I wonder if it was like, I'm not sure if it was like a post on Facebook or something that got someone's attention, that kind of spread the story. But it's usually something like that, it seems like, these days.
Yeah, well, there were a number of, Yeah, it's hilarious that the Green Cross actually posted one of the photos.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, the mother was okay with it. And the other thing is, like, people are not... maybe they are. Now I'm catching myself because I'm not 100% sure how these dispensaries work.
But you've been out to San Francisco and you don't know how these work exactly?
No, because you need like a medical card to get in there, and so I do not have one of those.
Slacker.
Yeah, I know, but I think you have to have like a California ID as well. So I did slack by not getting a fake ID. Yes,
yeah.
That was a lack of will on my part, I guess, or effort.
We could have OPUG Ka.
Opaka.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. Let's, maybe episode 100. Who knows? That could be an announcement. Stay tuned.
Opaka.
But I think some of the places they actually might have like a smoking room in there. So I was going to say like, it wasn't like people are coming out.
Baked out of their minds.
Yeah. But I guess they could be. So I take that back.
Or if, like, in Colorado, they have edibles, you could eat an edible. Although that generally does, I believe, does that take a little bit longer to kick in?
I believe so, yes.
There's
a few movies who have a comic plot point of someone not realizing that the edible they've eaten takes a long time to kick in, and then they eat more, and then they end up getting, way too high. Yeah.
Super big.
Yes.
Yeah, those
There was an Anna Faris movie like that, at least, I know.
Yeah, those things are pretty strong from what everyone says.
Yes, from what I've been told.
yeah, I have not tried one myself, but, evidently very potent.
So, I'm not sure how potent you would say our Bell Time beer is this week, Kevin, but this is probably fair to say that most of our listeners won't actually have access to.
No, this is definitely one that a majority of our audience will not have a chance to drink. Our good friend Steve Seymour, again. It is the last of the beers that he gave. Well, he only gave me 222s, which both of them were quite delicious. This one was his coffee porter. I've gotten used to a heavy dose of coffee in my coffee beers. I'm okay with this one. To me, tastes a little more subtle. Maybe it's just that the flavor of the coffee isn't as prominent as what some other brewers use. That is always something important, what flavor coffee you use.
Well, I am a fan of coffee and of beer, so put them together and I think it's working out pretty good.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. Oh, I guess I could try and look that up.
Oh, what are you looking up now?
Well, you talked about the stats.
Oh.
I know that he has has some of the stuff up there on Untappd.
Well, I'm sure this is not of necessarily interest to our listeners.
since they won't have access to it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
That's the other thing. Oh, is that the problem? Well, thank you, Steve. It was quite a delicious beer.
Yeah, I gotta say, I like it. Not like I gotta say, like I'm being forced to.
Yeah, Steve is forcing you at gunpoint from a five-hour drive away to force you to say that his beer was...
Please.
Delicious.
If anyone can hear us, Steve is holding us hostage until we say that we like his beer. Send help. Anyway, this beer is really... Did I mention how good this beer is, Kevin?
Well, you can now.
Okay.
And just so I can wrap it up, 5.3% ABV, 30 IBU... And plenty of coffee flavor, like, but not to me overwhelming. Like, that was a good level of coffee flavor.
Well, I think that'll give our listeners at least a good idea, approximation of what we've been experiencing here this evening as we were recording.
Go out and have your own coffee porter. I'm sure you can find one of your choosing.
And you even got the stats to compare. Yeah.
So at DeFrango 11, at Ghoster 30. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate us on iTunes. That would be nice and fancy.
Yeah.
And have a good night, grandkids.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.